Greetings and salutations. This is the Radioactive Restoration Show. I'm your host, Stan Petrowski, and we are all about restoration ecology in the Anthropocene. How do we slow down, stop, and turn around the level of habitat degradation and species loss that we are experiencing right now, as you are listening, right now? And this, our fair world, a world that for eons, geological ages, has been able to maintain life. And all of a sudden now, because we as a species appear on the scene, we find insects, animals, mammals, birds, fish, whales, orcas, turtles, tortoises, butterfly. I mean, we're losing them, folks. Pollinators, strategic elements of the web of life, of the food web, are blipping off the radar screen. And this is not caused by an asteroid flopping into the planet. It's not caused by geologic phenomena like a multiplicity of gigantic volcanoes causing nuclear winters, etc. This is caused by us, because we spend so much time in our life trying to make life easy by cutting corners. In the laws of nature, by circumventing critical components that keep us alive. Now, I'm not ascribing maliciousness to the human race in the sense that people willfully are undermining ecosystem function. But I've spoken about it before on the show that people put the blinders on when they make their living doing stuff that destroys the earth. I do not know how to get around that. I do not know how to address the issue of the human psyche, my psyche, our psyche, that allows us to, you know, we've made discoveries that at one time we didn't have. There was a time when we as a species used stone arrows, obsidian spear pointed spears. What do we do? Well, how do we go, whoa, wait a minute? How do we go, wait a minute? When people's lives, people are dealing with their next meal. People focus extensively on the future. How can I get my 401k, my CD, etc., 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 to produce the amount of synthetic money? Doesn't have real value. It's not even based on gold and silver. We got numbers in a bank. That's it. How can I increase the numbers that I have in a bank or in some financial construct that is going to keep me healthy, wealthy, and wise into my old age? This is what we do. And as a result of it, we are blinded to the impact of our extraction of, and I'll say it again, the extraction of quote unquote natural resources. The term natural resources seems innocuous, but it's not. It's not innocuous. We have commodified the natural world. We have put a dollar sign on different aspects of the natural world that can make us money. So we call them resources. The connotation in that word means that we're trying with all our might to be able to turn this thing that takes place in nature into money so that we can live. Oh, it's very difficult to deal with that. It really is. Now, this coming week, I am going to be taking a trip to the Washington, D.C. airport to attend BeaverCon 20, a conference comparable to the ones that we have had here in the Elko Basin for since 2009. And we're experimenting. We think that people on the East Coast need to restore beaver ecology also, and to elevate the level of ecological function back there. And so BeaverCon 2020 is going to happen next week. The only reason I'm concerned, my wife keeps going, hey, what about this COVID-19? What about this coronavirus? Are you going to go on the jet? Blah, 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 blah. Well, something's going to take us out one way or the other. And I'm going to do it. Unless they shut the jets down and prevent me from going. At least we know that this is the early onset of this plague. And I might, as an old codger in my dotage, survive exposure. I can't help but think how incredible this phenomenon is. Why did this disease spread so quickly in our world? Transportation. We used to walk. Then we had carts driven by animal traction, whether it was camels, cattle, or horses, or whatever. Hannibal, he wound up using elephants. I mean, yeah, we dominated the natural world in order to expedite our ability to travel quicker and faster and longer than we normally did by foot. Look at where we're at right now. I have to say it again. I grew up in inner city Philadelphia, and back in the 1950s, hello, they were still selling vegetables in horse-drawn wagons in inner city Philadelphia. Here we are in 2020, these many years later, and it's all done by 18-wheelers going, traffic going nonstop, inner cities, highways, back and forth, jets flying from continent to continent. I was talking to my brother today about the coronavirus, and he said, look, the cat's out of the bag. I thought that was funny. But it is. But in any way, I am going to go to the East Coast to explain and express my passion for aquatic habitat restoration, for terrestrial restoration, and for the nexus of both terrestrial and aquatic habitat restoration, which is supported by ecosystem engineers called Castor Canadensis. We need them all over North America, just like they were. So anyway, I thought I'd go on a rant just because. We can make a difference. We really can. And I thought, you know what? The Endangered Species Act, instituted by the Republican Richard Nixon. Hello, Republicans. Has preserved 99% of the threatened species and species of concern in our nation. It was a powerful tool. All of a sudden it's being undermined again. Please help me with this. No, listen, I am not into politics and political agendas. I have my opinions and I do vote. That being said, we're all human. We all make mistakes, and the mistakes are mounting up and they're impacting the natural world. And when it comes down to it, I'm going to vote in favor of those candidates that support the natural world. Because in the end, they're supporting us. It's called, what do they call it? Positive self-interest. Excuse me. It's just, how about using the term wisdom? So this week, I thought I would interject a positive note into the world of restoration ecology, a positive note that encourages me, just like the story of the buffalo that I covered a few podcasts back, that people all of a sudden go, wait a minute, what's the missing ingredient here? How come this high level of ecological dysfunction is happening on this landscape? And they go, oh, here's what it looked like before we just came in with our bulldozers. Well, there are plenty of stories like that. Some of those stories are based on radical actions on the part of people that said, you know what? I care about this particular species, and I'm going to do all I can to prevent it from disappearing from the face of the earth. Some of those species are preserved just by people who are not as radical as that. Like, say, the Greenpeace ship that was saving whales. But other people that were passionate and said, you know what, I have a real affinity to this particular species, and I'm going to do what I can to keep it alive. And I love people like that. And I think there's more of them than we realize. But I have a moral of the story, and that'll be focused on in section 4 of this podcast. But in the meantime, let's take a little break. And when we get back, we're going to talk about the Galapagos tortoises. See you in a bit. All right, we are back. This is the Radioactive Restoration Show. I'm your host, Stan Petrowski. We are talking about, again, restoration ecology. And, you know, I hope you'll pardon my rant at the first segment. I'm really serious about this. On a very small scale relative to the size of the planet or the universe, whatever, you know, perspective that you come at life at, you know, I have seen the natural world in so many words say thank you. And that thank you manifests itself in the revitalization of some aspect of the natural world, whether it's vegetation, wildlife. I'm a very, you know, aquatic habitat focused guy, a fish focused guy. And I've seen them respond when a small, infinitesimally small amount of wisdom is applied to the environment that they depend on. We can do this. And I'm speaking to you over the radio, and please believe me when I tell you, I'm a bumpkin from the backwoods. I live as far out as is possible within the context of southwestern Oregon. I mean, I'm in the boonies. But I have invested in the concept of communication in order to solicit help from you and to inspire you to join me to restoring the natural world. Look, you can say what you want. We are the dominant species on this planet at this juncture in terms of our impact on the natural world. We are a keystone species, and we are radically changing this planet. Saw an article this week. This is for podcast purposes, February 2020. Saw an article this week where an island in Antarctica, for all practical purposes, thawed out. Never recorded temperatures. What are we doing? It is our behavior. It is our desire to make life easier at the expense of other species and other parts of the world that is causing this. I'm not saying that we should be miserable, you know, dying of malaria in some cave somewhere as a hunter-gatherer society. But the amount of human hubris that is being expressed, you know, when someone has a modicum of just a modicum of wealth and they spend it going on safaris in Africa? Seriously? Give me a break. Or going on these expensive expeditions to different parts of the world just to hunt an elephant or a rhinoceros or some other unique species so you can mount this dead skin on a wall? What's that about? We do it. This is what we do. Some other people express it in other ways. They'll buy a Lamborghini and take pictures of themselves next to their Lamborghini and plaster it all over the Facebook. Why? What are we gaining by this? Or should I ask, what are we losing by this? So, yeah, dealing with the human condition and the value systems that we create for ourselves is a big factor in why we cannot surmount at this juncture, at least on the level that we need to, the major ecological issues that are facing us in this world. Now, I'm undaunted. I am, with all the grace that God can give me, I am going to keep going. It is my moral responsibility. And what I am thrilled about is the fact that there are many people in the world who are willing to do this. That I'm not alone. I don't feel like a Noah. One of the unique stories that I think expresses the complexity of restoration work and species recovery and habitat recovery is that of the Galapagos tortoise. Now, I'm assuming that most of the people that listen to this show know the difference between a turtle and a tortoise. Turtles are aquatic. In general, they depend on the aquatic ecosystems. And tortoises are land-based critters. It's funny, when I was trying to get my notes together for the show, I thought of my childhood in inner city Philadelphia in a hardcore neighborhood called Fishtown, down by near the Delaware River. The houses were built in the late 1800s, brick row houses, 3 stories high, 12-foot ceilings. Big houses for big families. And I happened to live in a mostly white neighborhood, even though the vast majority of the population of the city of Philadelphia at the time was 80% black, African folks. But I lived in a quote-unquote white neighborhood, and it was made up of Italians and Polacks and Germans and Irish and, yeah, all of it. All of the above. Europeans, Western Europeans, Eastern Europeans. And to be sure, you know, not too far from Fishtown down the road was another neighborhood, and it was dominated by Mongolians. It's crazy how we are so tribal, but we are. Anyway, I'm in this neighborhood, and right next door to me was a woman, elderly woman, called Mrs. Brennan, obviously Irish. And she had a yard full of box turtle, East Coast box turtles. Now, they called them box turtles, but they're tortoises. They're a land animal. And they were awesome. And one of the biggest thrills of my life when I was a kid was to see these tortoises sneak under Mrs. Brennan's fence into my yard. And they seemed to live forever. They seemed, you know, every year they would reproduce, and there were more and more of these box turtles. Man, I miss them. But the point was that here in the middle of this sterile concrete brick, concrete, asphalt, steel neighborhood with very, very little earth showing, Mrs. Brennan had this colony of box turtles. And they survived, prospered, and grew. I mean, they were there for all the years that I was there, and it was a decade and a half or whatever. And it made me realize that even it was the tender, loving care of Mrs. Brennan that kept those box turtles alive in an area where they used to exist in abundance and where they no longer could exist without human help. There's a story in there somewhere. There's something about that that resonates with the reality of the world we live in right now. Only expand it many times over. So I started in on looking at the difference between turtles and tortoises, and then I came across the Galapagos tortoises. What a story. Now, we know the Galapagos Islands are made famous because of Darwin, and I'm not going to get into that except to say that there was incredible diversity on these volcanic islands off the coast of South America. And Darwin went there and he derived his entire concept of evolution, spending time looking at the wildlife on those islands. Well, those tortoises, those giant tortoises that lived, they can live up to 200 years plus. When Darwin went there, he didn't even realize the full extent of what had happened, because whalers, sailors from a multiplicity of backgrounds, mostly Hispanic in that case, went to those islands and ate a bunch of those turtles. And not only did they do that, but they dumped off a bunch of rats that just inadvertently jumped off their ship and swam to shore. But they also put a bunch of goats and swine on those islands, so that when they were whaling and as they were going across the sea, they could stop at those islands and get some fresh meat. Now, did those sailors actually sit down and go, hey, man, let's go destroy the ecosystem of this island? No. They just said, hey, you know what? We've been eating a bunch of turtles and tortoises, and they seem to be getting less and less of them. And beside that, it's a mono diet that we're not really interested. Why don't we just bring these other species here? And as a result, many of the tortoises of those islands have gone extinct. And what we know now, way into the whole scene, is that each of those islands had their own unique species of tortoises. They were not all the same. They existed on those islands for many, 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 many years. An island called Española, and another island called Fernandina, did not have the same tortoise on it. But we didn't know that. What did we do? Well, we'll cover that in the next segment. This is Radioactive Restoration Show. I'm your host, Stan Petrosky. We'll see you in a little bit.
KQUA, The River.
99.7 KQUA LP Roseburg, a community service of Umpqua Watersheds. Umpqua Watersheds is dedicated to the protection and restoration of the ecosystems of the Umpqua Watersheds and beyond through education, training, advocacy, and ecologically sound stewardship. More information at umpquawatersheds.org and on Facebook.
We're back. We're talking about a recovery story. And I love them. They encourage me. Nothing pleases me more than to see, you know, a species that was on the brink of extinction come back, you know, to vitality and abundance. At least some modicum of it. And in this particular case, we're talking about the tortoises of the Galapagos. Amazing creatures. Now, because the tortoises were unique and were abused in the sense that, hey, look, when you spend so many weeks at sea and then all of a sudden you find yourself, you know, out in the ocean and you've been out there eating whatever it is you had stored on the ship and you're looking for some fresh food. And you come to an island and here are these big animals filled with oil and, you know, protein and all this stuff. You eat them. And that's what happened. We intervened. And that was, it's kind of ironic that the same dynamic that we see today with the coronavirus and the spread of this virus based on human travel is the same dynamic that took place in many parts of the world with the destruction of or elimination, extinction of certain species. But what I love about the story of the Galapagos tortoises is that they embody the resilience of the natural world. When human beings, who were the culprits in the first place, inadvertently come around and go, oops, made a mistake here, let's fix it. And people with money, people with passion, and they don't have to be embodied in the same person, turn around and go, wait a minute, these are really cool animals and they deserve to continue in time and space just because. And those passionate people and those supported people, fiscally supported people, it takes money to fix this stuff, turn around and go, hey, we need to recover these animals. Now, in the case of Española Island, when people began to get their heads screwed on straight, which was right about in 1965 with regard to recovery of the Galapagos tortoises. 1965, where was I? I was on Okinawa, getting ready to go to Vietnam. 1965, there were two males and 12 females that lived on the Española Island. Now, there were other tortoises that had been captured on the Galapagos Island and taken to zoos in the United States and elsewhere. And when people began to realize that these animals were going extinct, they went, uh-oh, and they did the right thing. Now, one of the animals that was in the United States, in the San Diego Zoo, had one of these tortoises, and as could be expected. He was named Diego. The island in right around 1965, all the way up to 1975, maybe even later than that, was purged of the swine, of the goats, and they claim that the goats were the main culprits on these islands. They just gobbled up all the vegetation that turtles needed, the tortoises needed. They got rid of them. They, through various and sundry means, eliminated most of the rats and the swine. And began a breeding program. Now, the program was a breeding program in captivity. They didn't just turn these critters loose. Well, Diego the tortoise, the mighty tortoise, was taken from the San Diego Zoo and brought into a breeding program. The island of Española had two male tortoises and 12 female tortoises. That's all that was left. The original population was estimated between 200 and 300,000 tortoises. We were down to 12 females and two males. Crazy. And so what did they do? They began a breeding program. Initially, what they did was they just brought tortoises from wherever they were back to these islands and began to crossbreeding them. And what they didn't realize initially was that each of these species was uniquely different to the various and unique islands that were out there. DNA was not as sophisticated back in the day. Now it was, and there were whole species of these tortoises that went extinct. But because they didn't realize that the DNA was what it was, that they were unique families of these tortoises on these islands, that some of the tortoises that remained were actually hybrids. And so the genetics of the various and sundry islands was acknowledged, and then a breeding program took place that allowed for them to go, okay, we might be able to preserve the genetics of this particular island or that particular island. I love it. Now, is it just a fun thing? Is it just a goody two-shoes thing that human beings respond and say, wait a minute, this biological diversity matters? It matters. And we need to preserve it. There's something inside of certain human beings that allow themselves to become sensitive to those aspects of the natural world that says, wait a minute, a mushroom is not just a mushroom if it appears on the West Coast or the East Coast. They're unique. They're adapted to those environments. They're genetically unique. They're environmentally unique. They are ecosystem unique. I say kudos to that segment of the human race that is sensitive to those issues, because they're the people that are doing the work. And it's not black and white. There's some human beings that are in that particular niche of human activity for fiscal, for monetary reasons. They're making bank doing it. And I'm not this purist who says, well, if they're making bank doing it, then I don't want them. You know, I don't want to gain the advantage in the preservation of a particular species because they're making bank on it. That's one of the compromises that some people make. Now, if they're synthetic constructs of making bank on restoration ecology is proposed as a solution to a situation, and in actuality, through research and academic research and scientific research, we find that, no, that's just a money gig. Then be gone with you. In particular, I'm thinking of the hatchery program in the state of Oregon. That's another radio show. My point here is that it's complex, and we have to leverage and take advantage of every scenario. I didn't know this, but when I was doing my homework for the show, I didn't know Steven Spielberg used the tortoises of Galapagos to design E.T. That's crazy. Why doesn't everybody know that? I'm not into trivia, but it blew my mind that Steven Spielberg used the image of a tortoise to create the image of this alien in the movie E.T. Well, I don't know when that movie was created, but it was long ago enough for him to realize, hey, we got a problem. This species is going extinct. And so as a result of DNA testing and various and sundry other efforts, the tortoises of Española Island are in a place of recovery right now. Now, to be sure, there's only 2,000 tortoises on the island, and compared to 200,000, but people are aware now. The things that they were doing to undermine that species, they are no longer doing. Albeit, I have to say, and I'm not casting aspersions on Native Americans or Native South Americans, but there are indigenous people that said, hey, we've hunted these turtles forever. They were one of our main food sources. We want them. It's part of our culture. It's part of our DNA. And so poaching goes on. You see how complex this is? And restoration ecology is just like that. And these critters are amazing. They'll live a couple of hundred years. They outlive us as a species. And yet, in spite of that capacity as a species, look, they are phenomenal. You talk about drought. These tortoises can go without drinking water for a whole year. Is that amazing? They've adapted to an environment that goes into drought for some reason. The same thing with their reproduction. A tortoise, female tortoise, can store semen for up to 20 years. waiting for the ideal climatic and weather and environmental conditions that will allow her to activate those principles in her being that after 20 years can produce a fertile egg or 10. That's incredible. How come we're disrupting all this? All right, let's take another break. This is the Radioactive Restoration Show. I'm your host, Stan Petrowski. We'll see you in a bit. Restoration Show. We're talking about Galapagos tortoises and the recovery of Galapagos tortoises. It's a great story. There are people from all walks of life and for all different motivations involved with recovering this species. I find it very, very interesting that here are these remote islands out in the Pacific, and governments and people of all walks of life are dumping money and effort into recovering these animals. They're intervening in the natural processes that are associated with this species. And what I mean by that is they have, on the Galapagos Islands, they have breeding grounds, breeding centers, where they are analyzing DNA, they're separating the different species of turtles out that have been all hybridized and mixed up, and sorting out those individuals that belong to certain islands of the Galapagos. Why are they doing that? Why make all that effort? Intuitively, we know we need to. There's money going into this. The Ecuadorian government is dumping money into it. Wildlife societies all over the planet are dumping money into it, and individual wealthy people are dumping money into it to restore these tortoises. They'll intervene. They'll go in and create conditions in their breeding program area that don't exist there. They'll remove all these different rocks, and they hand feed these tortoises. They cultivate the species of plants that they're accustomed to. Why? Because they can't spare any losses. In the natural world, there's a process going on. A female tortoise drops an egg and it breaks. What they do now is they watch carefully these tortoises, and when the females are getting ready to lay eggs, there are human beings there catching these eggs so that they can put them in an incubator, because the survival rate in the incubator is higher than the survival rate in the natural world. These breeding programs seek to eliminate as many of the natural factors that would lower the rate of success of propagation because they can't afford not to. And I know there's some folks out there that say, well, let nature take its course. No, we've already disrupted it too much. What's it take? It blew me away when I started seeing who it was that was seeking to preserve these turtles, these tortoises. My goodness, you could tell I'm from the East Coast. It was wealthy people. There are people in Florida that have pet Galapagos tortoises. Yeah. And you might go, well, that's gross. That shouldn't be allowed, blah, 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 blah. You know what? There's some of the people that are spending big dollars annually to support the recovery of Galapagos tortoises in the Galapagos. Am I saying that they should have them? I'm not going to go there. I wouldn't. I mean, I'm this pathetic idealist that says, you know what? If you got a passion for these critters, no, don't take them to Florida and go into this extensive regime of keeping them alive in the synthetic environment. Just dump your money into the Galapagos. That's my way of thinking. But I'm just one person. If somebody's out there and they have a passion for this particular rare species, then by golly, if they're recovering the species, what are you going to tell them? No, we don't want your dirty money. See how complicated this is? It really is. Humanity is flawed, and we live in a world dominated by humans. And we're seeking to recovery of many species in a complex social political climate internationally. I mean, I still, to this day, It irks me that people are going to Africa and slaughtering the megafauna to grab a rhinoceros horn so that they can eat it, powder it up and eat it as some special, you know, aphrodisiac or whatever it is that they're going through. They go through the whole what you eat, you are thing. I don't know. They take it to extreme. I don't get it. My point here is that it's not black and white. And economics plays a role, and passion plays a role, and all those things are filtered through different lenses because each individual is unique. Am I willing to take advantage of a situation that allows for the recovery of a species, even though I might not agree that I have a radical paradigm difference with somebody else? No. I'm all about communicating with people and going, hey, I want to be upfront and say I don't agree with you. But on this point here, I can agree with you. Let's bring this species back, or let's restore this kind of habitat. Polarization is the last thing we need in this agenda of restoration work. So the Galapagos tortoises are recovering to some extent. There was in 2016, which is only 4 years ago, an extensive census of the tortoises on the Cristobal Island, San Cristobal Island. And what they would do is they'd go out there, like whole squads of people, they would go out and stand like a distance of 5 feet apart and fan out and go through all these geographical areas to find a tortoise. And when they would find one, they would mark it. They would actually paint a number on it. They would take a blood sample so that they can analyze the DNA, and then they would implant a microchip into it that could be tracked via satellite. Hey, folks, that costs a lot of money. Where is it coming from? Beside the Ecuadorian government, it's coming from people who care. It's coming from people who realize that this mysterious and wondrous diversity of life needs to be maintained. And why would I bring it up to you? Why would I devote a whole radio show, an hour of your life and mine? Actually, it's more than an hour for me, to the recovery of a species that is in a remote island off the coast of South America. And even since 2016, they're doing this extensive survey. They're gathering all this data, and they are sorting out the mess that was inadvertently created. You know, I can envision a person, most likely a male, that spent weeks and weeks and weeks out in the ocean and finally comes to land, and he sees this shelled animal and goes to another island and sees another shell animal and says, well, they're the same. They're not. They were unique species on each of those islands. Now our understanding is becoming more and more sophisticated, and we're seeking to respond to the level of sophistication that our knowledge gives us. Now, I don't know the personal names of the people that are behind all this, or the government agencies that are involved, or et cetera, et cetera. I know that there's guys that are hired on as biologists, as caretakers, as whatever, that are making money preserving these species. I say kudos to them. Not because they're making money doing something like that, but because they're keeping the species going. This entanglement between economies and recovery is very, very unique, especially in the case of these tortoises. I'm blown away. In 2019, there was on the island of Fernandina, a tortoise that had been declared extinct was found a year ago, a little over a year ago. Why? Because some guy on a TV show that is devoted to finding and discovering species that were declared extinct, that's his gig. He's built an entire career in recovering, discovering and recovering extinct species. Now, why? Why? Because people are willing to watch TV shows and put up with gobs of commercials. It's all about the money, right? So that they can watch this man make these discoveries. Well, in the island of Fernandina in 2019, a tortoise was found unique to that island and completely different than all the other Galapagos Islands. A unique species. And she was, when they discover her, she was underweight, emaciated, and in poor condition. They got her, they captured her, they took her out of the volcanic caldera that was on that island, Fernandina Island. In a short period of time, she gained like 15 pounds. They are in the process now of going out there and going, okay, were there more of these species that were declared extinct in 1909 or whenever it was? Some little nook and cranny of that island which was able to barely sustain what was left of an abundance of these animals? That's exciting. That is thrilling. I'm glad. Let's take another break. This is the Radioactive Restoration Show. I'm your host, Stan Petrowski. See you in a little bit.